Well, grace, mercy, and peace be with all of you here this day from our triune God. I think that any time that we want to have a serious discussion about marriage, it would not be complete unless we re-examine the marriage of those two Scandinavian sweethearts, Ole and Lena. Now, it just so happened that Sven's friend, Ole, stopped by for a visit one day. "How's it going with your marriage, Ole? Is the honeymoon over yet?" Sven asked. "Well, the marriage is doing fine," said Ole. And Lena, she treats me just like a Greek god." "That's great," said Sven. "But how do you get treated like a Greek god, Ole?" "Well, you see, Sven, every night the wife, she serves me a burnt offering." So enough of my bad Scandinavian accent this morning. All right. Now this morning I do want to preface my message by saying that not everyone is destined in life to marry someone. Some people may choose not to be married for a number of different reasons. And even the Apostle Paul himself at one point suggested that it might be better to remain in a state of singleness. But because Jesus is being asked here to comment about marriage, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about marriage this morning. Now let's face it, marriage can at times be messy. And that is because life itself is messy. There is no surprise there. But let's be clear, marriage can also be something very beautiful and fun and deeply fulfilling as a part of a gift from God. A great marriage takes a great deal of work and compromise and patience and forgiveness. It's also, however, a playground for mistakes to be made that can at times create lasting wounds and betrayals that can bruise the soul and levels of intimacy that can bring to us either great blessings but also maybe great burdens. And why shouldn't it be? I mean, think about it for a minute. Marriage is an institution that is handcrafted by God for broken people. It connects two individuals and then fuses them together as one within an equally crazy world. The goal of marriage, of course, is to create a union that, despite its baggage, is better together than apart. And a vast majority of times, I believe that it really is. Marriage brings two people together where deep needs are met, where great joys are shared, and where much beauty can be created. But along the way, our individualistic natures can unavoidably collide. And often, while we are trying our best to satisfy one another, we end up sinning against each other. And so it gets, well, messy, to say the very least. Now, a few years back, The Atlantic magazine asked the question, what was the world's worst marriage? And they brought together a slate of authors, a television producer, and some well-known lawyers, all who joined together and compiled this list of the messiest marriages in history. So among them, as you might guess, was the marriage of Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, whose intense personalities made for a rather volatile combination, one which drove them to the altar in marriage and then to the courtroom in divorce, not once, but twice. And of course, what list would be complete without Henry VIII? He made his way through six different marriages, using his power to abuse and to oppress each of those six wives that he had and to execute two of them. Now, surprisingly, I thought missing from this list were pop singer Britney Spears and Jason Alexander, because they famously showed the world that marriage can get messy in a matter of just moments. Two of them filed for divorce 55 hours after getting hitched in Las Vegas. And yet, despite the chaos that inevitably is a part of the craziness that occurs in our marriages, marriage is still an essential and beautiful part of God's created order. At its most basic level, marriage, with all of its complications, exists to carry us through, to help us to survive, and to thrive as a people in a world of even greater chaos and complications. Marriage exists to meet current needs through spouse and through family, needs that will be unknown in God's future but coming reign. However, until that day arrives, it remains for us essential. And this is precisely the point, I think, that Jesus was making here in the gospel reading that we have for today. He was asked the question about marriage in the resurrection, and his reply pretty much says this: it is better for us to work on our marriages in this life than to worry about marriage in the next one. Jesus was approached here by a group of religious leaders known as the Sadducees with this rather theological riddle. In an attempt to see where he stood on the idea of a literal resurrection of the dead, a concept, by the way, which the Sadducees themselves didn't buy into, the Sadducees wanted to present Jesus with this truly complicated scenario here. Seven dead brothers and one wife inherited by all of them. And since all would be raised to life in the kingdom to come, according to Jesus, to whom would this extremely unlucky widow then be married to? The Sadducees were hoping, you see, that this challenge that they posed would demonstrate that the whole idea of a resurrection was sort of a ludicrous idea. So Jesus responds in this way by saying, "The sons of this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy to attain to that age and to the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage." In other words, look, don't use marriage in this world to disprove God's promise about the next one. Marriage is a gift for today, meeting needs that will be fulfilled in different ways tomorrow. Therefore, in his response, Jesus not only affirms and gives us a glimpse here into a future life, but he upholds the importance of marriage as this sort of an eschatological kind of a placeholder, which helps us to better navigate our current struggles and appreciate what that coming kingdom is going to be like. So let's take a look at just a few examples of why this is the case. First, Jesus was saying here, I think, that marriage was made for life and death. In this world, life is fragile. It begins with babies that are breakable and are beautiful and are absolutely dependent. They need a mother to feed them, a dad to burp them, two committed, complementary adults to create a playground of growth and safety and joy for them. And likewise, as we get older, moms and dads become like their children once were. They become breakable and dependent and desperately in need of the nurture and the comfort that a spouse can provide. It comes in the form of those trips to the doctor's office with hands held. Or sitting by each other's side when one enters into an assisted living facility and making sure that their best friend maintains their dignity even as their body bends now towards the grave. Marriage provides a cradle for a beautiful fragility of human life. However, in the age to come, the burden of death and the fragility of life will be gone. Jesus promises in our future life that we cannot die anymore. So we will no longer need to be reminded to take our meds, or to be helped up the stairs, or to be encouraged through those cancer treatments. The cradle that marriage provides for our fragile human lives will be retired once our bodies are retired. And we will be raised imperishable to enjoy an eternal existence with God. Now, second, in this life, marriage is made for oneness and for companionship. Now, sure, we can experience this in other relationships within our lives, friends and extended family. But when a husband and a wife pray together, work together, argue together, parent together, worship together, share a bed together, and forgive together, well, over the course of time, that's what's called intimacy. Our need to be deeply known, to have our weaknesses balanced and our shortcomings shored up by another corresponding strength, that's all found there in marriage. Now, just in case you were happening to wonder what the record for the longest marriage in history belongs to, it is Daniel and Susan Blakeman. Until Susan's death in 1863, the couple enjoyed 91 years and 12 days of married life. Now just think about that for a minute. Almost a century of sharing and connecting and being vulnerable with just one other person. Now, you could be sure that they must have experienced hundreds of messy marriage moments during that time. But one could also bet that after, say, maybe 75 or 80 years of marriage, that Susan and Daniel could read one another's minds and finish each other's sentences. And yet, even that level of oneness pales, you see, in comparison to what we will experience in God's kingdom to come. In this age, marriage helps us to fill the gap that separates us from our Creator, who now we see and feel and know only in part. As Paul put it, "For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face." Therefore, it may be difficult, I think, for some of us to grasp what that sense of wholeness in God's presence actually looks like. But again, marriage gives us, I think, that best glimpse of that. For those of you who are married, you know that moment when you are cuddling on the couch with the one that you love, and all at that moment seems right with the world. A sense of satisfaction fills your heart, maybe a smile creeps across your face at that moment, and you think to yourself, if I could just press record on this feeling just this moment, then I would replay it over and over and over again. I'd live in it forever. Well, perhaps what that is really just a faint understanding of the fulfillment that we will one day all know in Christ. And here's one more final thought for you this morning. In this life, marriage exists for promise making and promise keeping. In this broken world, instability and uncertainty rule the day. Sin drives us all to love ourselves more than our neighbor. And the world is this cauldron of boiling unpredictability. So marriage offers something radically different to us. It offers the possibility of two selfish people making promises of selflessness and stability and fidelity and endurance. It begins at the altar with that grand promise we make, that promise to love and to cherish until death parts us. But this gets lived out in all of the millions of little promises then that are made every day, like promising to take out the trash, or to call me when you get there, or to pick up milk on the way home. Sure, marriage partners don't always succeed, but their constant pursuit of the ideal and their willingness to be accountable to each other creates a safe haven of relative security in a world where there is no such thing as a sure thing. But even this, you see, is just a glimpse of a greater reality that God will one day usher into being. In our future life, promises themselves will become obsolete. Now, this may sound like something hard for us to grasp at this moment, but someday there will be, in fact, a new creation. Imagine a world where there is this unshakable love with no hint of an underlining worship of self. A world where, as sons and daughters of God, we enjoy unquestionable protection and providence and care. Indeed, faith and hope, these are the substances of promises. But they will pass away, and only love is going to remain. However, until that time comes, marriage offers, I believe, for us an opportunity to practice those habits and those benefits of promise making and promise keeping. Yes, marriage can certainly be complicated. Yes, marriage can at times be messy. Yes, marriage is not always perfect. But given the people who enter into it and the world that requires it, how could it not be? And yet, for all of those who might abuse it, I am also reminded that there are billions of others who are blessed by it and who desperately need it. Because until marriage is, as Jesus predicted, made wonderfully obsolete, it is a wonderful opportunity for blessings and for happiness to occur, offering to us today that greatest glimpse of the satisfaction and the wholeness and the stability that we will eventually experience in full when Christ's kingdom comes. Amen.